This reading was shared out. It is currently one of the things on the homepage of Unitarian Universalist Association's webpage, and it was shared out a few days after General Assembly, in response to General Assembly. And so, hard, brave choices. It starts with a quote from Philip Pullman from In the Amber Spyglass. Choose one way out of many. All the ways you don't take are snuffed out like candles, as if they never existed. At the moment, all Will's choices existed at once. But to keep them all in existence meant doing nothing. He had to choose, after all. Goes on to say, when I was a youth, the young adult fantasy series by Philip Pullman, his Dark Materials, was an important source of spiritual guidance for me. Something I love about being a Unitarian Universalist is drawing sacred texts from places such as the shelves of a middle school library. In the final book of the series, one of the young protagonists has a decision to make, upon which possibly the fate of our world and the next world hangs. Before he decides, he evaluates his options, as if they are lit candles before him. In a dark room, several taper candles and smaller candles in red cut glass holders are all lit. This short passage returned to me recently when I was faced with a hard, brave choice. I saw all my options in front of me as lit candles, waiting there for me, representing different things, different paths, all looking particularly enticing and bright and shiny and glittery, and some maybe a little frightening, and all of them on fire. Before I chose, when all my options were still in existence, I felt attached to all of those candles. I didn't want to choose and snuff out all my other options. Eventually, I made my choice, but I still grieved the candles I had blown out. This is a year in which hard, brave choices will be required of all of us. Our world is changing. So much is in flux. Increasingly, we are faced with questions and decisions about our money, our time, our place in history, how we act, how we don't act, what matters, what we give our attention to, what kind of world we're building. We cannot afford to linger in front of all the candles aflame in front of us. Will had to choose, after all. It takes courage to blow out the candles of the roads we will not travel. But in this moment, our task is to find this courage and lift it up, and, lucky for us, we have each other. We do not have to do this alone. And on the other side of that decision, we can travel forward together with our one remaining candle ready to light the way. So come and find me. Travel alongside me. Bring your courage, because Lord knows I don't have enough of my own. Together we can blow out the candles of the roads not taken. And then we can go forward side by side. Liz, do you want the microphone?
Sure.
Do we want to switch back and forth?
So, as some of you know, Natalie and I attended the UUA General Assembly that was held in June. And luckily for me, because I got really, really sick just before it started, I wasn't going to have to jump on a plane and, you know, all of that. So it worked out really well. And we wanted to talk to you today a little bit about the things that we learned, how the voting went, and what attending an event as big as this online was like. And it was interesting, to say the least. So, for example, we had to navigate back and forth between two different websites. One of them allowed us to vote as well as go to discussion forums, which we participated in. And then there was another general website that was run by an outside company that was pretty nifty. If you see in the middle, there's a screen, and we could attend live classes as well as pre-recorded discussions on things, and we both attended quite a few different things and learned an awful lot. Off to the side, you could see chat that was happening while people were watching the General Assembly or attending specific classes. Let's see if I can get my little cursor moving. No, I don't think it'll work on here. But on the left, you can see where it says sessions, speakers. We had different ways to try and find things that were of interest to us. People could even send us messages, and I got several messages during the conference saying, hey, guess what? Tonight at 6 p.m., we're going to have a live knitting and crochet forum. So people were meeting for all kinds of different reasons, some that were directly related to the event and some things that were just for fun. So it was really kind of interesting to see all of that happening from this little box.
Liz, I want to point out on this little box, if you are a person like me who, like, my tension levels rise when notifications, like, are on my phone. There's usually one in a relationship that doesn't matter. My husband has over 1,000 unopened emails that has the notification thing on his phone. I have zero. So I'm that person. 4,800 messages in the community board open for everyone to see from different groups or different things like that. So there was a lot of chatter in the background that you could be a part of or not, depending on your comfort level and your choice. So you could choose the groups you wanted to chat with. You could, there were a lot of crafting groups that were talking about what they were doing. There were groups with children, groups with disabilities, small community groups that formed. I found it completely overwhelming, and I ignored that box totally because the number just kept climbing and climbing, and I actually moved my screen so I couldn't see it. So a lot of options to participate, but also options that you didn't have to participate if you didn't want to in certain things.
And so here are some of the takeaways that are just big and sort of general that we culled together at the end about what the thing was about. And I'll let Natalie talk about that.
Yeah, so GA in and of itself is the largest gathering of UUs annually worldwide. This year, with holding it virtually, they did it purposefully to allow access for a lot of people to ensure that there was really robust participation when it came to the vote on Article 2. They also used it as an opportunity, though, to really increase accessibility for those with disabilities. And there were several things that were done within the platform to help either those who had visual disabilities or hearing disabilities to better access the work that was happening, as well as ensuring that the other part that they pointed out with it was that it was promoting environmental sustainability, which is something they really want to move forward and thinking about in their conferences. There is a lot of value in bringing people together in person. Bringing people together in person from all over the United States does leave a footprint environmentally. And so they want to consider some of the ways to adjust their work to address that. So really looking at how they could promote environmental sustainability while still getting what we want to get out of GA. Nobody had an answer. That was just the question that they are raising as they move forward with it. There were delegates who participated from all 50 states and Washington, D.C., so there was representation from all over the United States. There were, they said, 734 congregations who were voting and more than 3,400 who attended. More than 3,400 who attended, but 2,757 of those were voting delegates. So as you can imagine, like from our congregation, the two attendees were both voting delegates. From some congregations, they had their voting delegates and a handful of others. The 3,400 attendees does not account for if there were people that were viewing, like if a congregation set up a viewing and had it up on the screen here and had 30 people in the pews. It doesn't account for that because they really had no way of accounting for that. So many more UUs may have viewed than those who participated by logging in. So really a large number of people who in some way interacted with it this year. So huge, huge, huge conference that Liz and I tried our best to navigate the complexities of during the 4 days.
It was very convenient to be able to slip off to the restroom whenever I needed to get a cough drop or, you know, or wash a cup and pour myself a cup of coffee, trying to keep myself going and focused through all this. And, of course, you know, when you attend anything online, you only have to get dressed from the waist up. So that was nice, too. So there were a lot of things that we wound up having to vote on that we weren't really planning for, stuff that was kind of brought up last minute. So I'll let Natalie talk about that, too.
Yeah. So I know as a congregation, we really focused on preparing for the vote on the revision to Article 2 because that was a very substantial thing going on within our organization or within UUA and our relationship with them. There were other things that as a delegate, you're called upon to vote on while you're there. First, everybody has to vote on whether or not you're going to follow the rules of engagement. That was an easy easy one to pass, but there was always somebody. Every single vote, somebody said no, which I think is a very UU thing to do. Even the rules of engagement, some people voted no, that they didn't think we should follow the rules of engagement. Rules of engagement passed, so we did follow the rules of engagement. I'll be fair, with the online platform, it's kind of hard not to follow the rules of engagement. You can chatter in the chat box, but it's not like somebody can just stand up and take the mic. They have to let you into the room where you're the guest speaker now and have you come on. So it's a little bit different. They have a little bit more element of control on the facilitation side. But we did agree to the rules of engagement. There were amendments proposed to the Article 2 revision that we had to vote on. One amendment did pass, so in the new Article 2, there's a slight revision to some of the words. We also had to vote to even allow the actions of immediate witness to be discussed. So if we wanted to, we could say, we don't want to discuss this action of immediate witness that was written, and then it would not be added on to the final day's agenda to discuss and vote on. I will say the votes to put things on the agenda were all incredibly high. I think because people understood that whether you like it or not, we still want to talk about it. The one vote that surprised me at the beginning was actually a vote about a change in one of the bylaws. And the way UUA is set up, it goes on the consent agenda, which just means we all said yes to it, unless 10 people, just 10 out of that 2,700 plus, say no, we want to talk about it. Like 14 people said no, we want to talk about it. So we talked about it. It was the most unproductive debate because nobody actually had anything to say about it, because it was literally an amendment to say this committee could be bigger if it needs to be bigger. That was the amendment to the bylaws. But by their process, because 10 people said, no, we want to talk about it, they had to talk about it. The other things that we talked on, the core values, that big vote around the Article 2 revision, we had that. And then there were two other things, types of things that came up that we had to vote on. One being a business resolution and one being an action of immediate witness. Both of those are ways that UUs can say this is something important and raise it up to say nationally, all congregations, all of UUA should pay attention to this topic. And then it specifically goes into details, and both of them call out actions that should be taken on that topic. So it's not just a, hey, this is important. It's, this is important. Here's why it's important. Here's 7 to 20 things we should do about this. It's not like super in the weeds, like you have to have 7 pencils out in order for this to happen, but it does call out, like, specifically funds should go towards this, or we should support these types of groups. There's a big difference between two of them, and more frequently at GA, you see actions of immediate witness than you do business resolutions. And so I wanted to explain the difference between them and what they mean for us as a congregation and UUA as a whole. So I'm actually going to talk about the actions of immediate witness first. Actions of immediate witness are a statement about a significant action, event, or development in the world that necessitates immediate engagement and action among UU member congregations and groups. So, important issue right now, that's the criteria about it. So it couldn't be an important issue that was really like a major issue 30 years ago that we're still working on, but maybe it's just not finished. It has to be something that this year is in crisis mode. And it needs to be something that we can take immediate action on. And then the action is supposed to be taken by UU member congregations and groups. It does not dictate action for UUA. It says here are actions that groups can take and should take, and here's some recommendations for it. There were 3 actions of immediate witness that made it through to discussion. And at the very end, we're going to talk about the results and stuff, so I'll get into them there. But it's important to note that that's what an action of immediate witness does. It says, hey, UU congregations, this is important. For context, in 2020 and 2021, there was an action of immediate witness around response to COVID and truth about COVID within communities. You wouldn't have had that in 2018. So immediate action that should be taken. They are very powerful because these are coming together as individual congregations, individual members within the faith, and saying, this is something incredibly important. They tend to have higher support when they pass than UUA business things, because this is us as the members, as the people, what we find important. On the other side are business resolutions, also really important things, but there's a big difference in business resolutions. So a business resolution is a business resolution for UUA, not for the congregations. It is a formal decision by UUA, it's decided by the members, but the actions that are in there that need to be taken around that topic are for UUA to take. So what that means is if General Assembly passes a business resolution, we are saying, hey, UUA, these seven things that are outlined in this business resolution, you're going to put some time and funds, and they're going to happen. And we have decided that you are going to do this. Now, UUA has to agree, and they do agree. Business resolutions that come to General Assembly already have backing from UUA. But there is skin in the game, there are funds, there are times, there are resources allocated by UUA to whatever that is that are baked into the writing of that. So when the General Assembly passes a business resolution, it's a charge of arms to say, here, UUA, something you need to do. It can include things like supporting congregations to do X, Y, and Z, but it really is a responsibility laid, now codified, within the actual plan for UUA moving forward that they have to do. Those don't come up nearly as often, because whereas the action of immediate witness, everybody can be like, I agree, peace out, not actually do anything. We would like for them to do things. It doesn't require that they do things. There's no penalty if an action of immediate witness is you know, passed and then our church doesn't do anything on it. We can use it and we can take from it and we can go forward on whatever that topic is. For UUA, if they don't, they're actually in violation of their own bylaws if they don't take the actions that were approved within the business amendment. The business resolution. So really important this year that there was a business resolution and what it means.
And these are the specifics.
So the top one was the business resolution. It was around protecting rights of LGBTQI community, specifically calling for action for UUA to support congregations, prioritizing congregations who are in states where there is legislation attacking trans rights or attacking LGBTQI rights. And so UUA has to create a plan to support the work of local congregations in those states, as well as it outlines things at the state level and the national level, specific organizations, specific actions UUA needs to do to actively fight anti-trans legislation that is coming out. So again, very specific actions that are outlined in there. This is really important because I'm going to say one of the first, because I don't know of any, and everybody else who was talking about didn't know of any. Like I said, this actually codifies it within the plan of the religion. So since we don't have a creed, it doesn't kind of put it in the creed, but there are not other religions in the United States that are taking this type of an action and actually formalizing it within the scope of their legal wording around the religion. And so this requires UUA to do those things in a different way. This would be the equivalent of like another church saying, you know, we're actually going to put it formally into our own bylaws or something that we're going to support this. It codifies it in a way that other things don't, which is, I should say, it's good and bad. It's good that it was there, bad that it needs to be there, because it wouldn't be there if there wasn't a cause for it. But it's important that UUA is going to be taking this step. The other three that were brought up were on these topics, around climate change, solidarity with Palestine, and then there was a response to that one about Hamas held hostages, and then the last one was about ongoing COVID-19 support.
So here is a little bit more from the website. If you notice the second little box down, it says voting receipts. So if we wanted to, we could actually print a list of the things we voted on and what our vote was, if our congregation wanted us to do that. And then on the third box down, you can look at all of the total sum results of how many people voted, how they voted, what the decisions that were made.
If anybody is very interested, I printed off the three official 2024 results. They are signed by the president of Simply Voting, which is the organization that did the vote. And so it has literally every vote, including whether or not we're going to talk to. No, sorry, I did not print off the one where we said we would follow the rules. I didn't want to waste paper for that one. But all of the other votes that we had to do about the amendments, about whether things made it to the agenda. So this has all of the percentages from every vote officially here, if anybody wants to see them.
Right, and then this is an example of what a receipt would have looked like, where it shows how somebody voted.
This is not only an example, this is mine.
Well,
but to say, like, I can access my specific ones, I can't access anybody else's. I can get the full results, I can print off mine, UUA could print off mine, but somebody from another congregation can't just go in and see my voting portal.
And again, you know, when you print it out, you get this little summary of the big issues. And so, of course, I voted yes on everything.
But we did have like 4.2% say they didn't want to follow the rules.
Right.
That was honest of them.
Yeah. So there was, when you went to the site where you could do the voting, there was also a little box that said, enter the discussion forums. And so I noticed this very strange trend, or at least strange to me, and I'd never seen this before, and frankly, found it kind of offensive. So I thought I'd like to talk a little bit about that. And it has to do with something called land acknowledgments. If you notice where it says announcements and information, you go to the second piece down, and that was so many people at the very beginning of a class that they were leading or anything that they were participating in would announce their presence by naming the nearest Native American tribe to where they lived. And I thought, well, that's a little odd. And then I found out this was a common practice in UU, and I'd never seen it anywhere before. When I have gone to Indian conferences, if you're an official member of a tribe, you would announce yourself that way. But if you are not, you just would leave that blank. You know, you might tell a little bit about how you came to be there or what your relationship is to tribal matters and, you know, why you think, you know, your presence is important or what your interest is. But you wouldn't announce yourself, I'm from the great land of the Navajos, you know, because that sort of implies that you're either one of them or you have some sort of ongoing official relationship with them. And in many cases, I could tell that the people who are making these announcements didn't qualify on one or the other criteria for that. They weren't tribal members, and they didn't appear to have a relationship with that tribe. And I thought, well, this feels kind of appropriative. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how else to put that, but like you're using their name and presence to sort of beef yourself up. I don't know. It just didn't feel good. I just knew that. And so I put a little announcement out there about it after contacting some of my colleagues who are tribal members and asking them what they thought about that. And I got different opinions, but as a rule, most of them said, yeah, for Indians, it's kind of an eye-rolling moment when we hear people do that. You know, they're kind of trying to bank off of our presence and this sort of mythological idea that is formed through John Wayne movies and pieces of artwork that give a really inaccurate picture of who we are. And then when they find out we're just people and we fail to rise up to this fantasy that they have, they withdraw their presence from us and often their support. On the other hand, as one friend of mine who's a professor at Minnesota of Indian Studies noted, he said, but if you're too harsh on people when you do that, when you call them out, then they'll definitely withdraw their support. Mm-hmm. So it's a coin with two sides, then neither one is good. And he said, so you do whatever's in your heart about it. So I was able to go online and find some articles about what's wrong with land acknowledgments. And I posted a little note about it and how I thought and how I, you know, what I thought about it. And some generalized statements about Native Americans and why others who do not have official capacity to speak on their behalf should not. And then I posted some articles that people could reference about land acknowledgments and how Native Americans feel about those things. So that's another way in which we could participate in the assembly is air our gripes, you know, and go on there and talk about issues that would not be on an official ballot, but matters of etiquette, other things that we might want to consider for the future, et cetera, et cetera. And this brings us almost to the end.
So I have to say, on the first day, I too felt awkward with the land acknowledgments, and they were part of a general kind of accessibility trend where all of the speakers who were speakers for the sessions, were presenters, anybody coming from UUA or a congregation that was there to specifically present, was doing an introductory descriptor. So they want you to keep them short, to the point and related to why you're talking. So for me, I could say I'm a white woman in my 30s wearing a maroon dress and glasses with short red hair. So something that gives you a visual but doesn't go into like I have three moles right on my left cheek. Or you don't go too detailed. You also don't go to irrelevant things. So it's important for the context a lot of times what your race is, could be important your gender, your age, related to your expertise on a topic or where your perspective's coming from. And then just a little bit of, you know, some visual cues of kind of what I look like to help those who are visually impaired. That's when a lot of people would also say, and I'm from this congregation, the land of this, this, and this. And I remember on the first day hearing that and kind of being like, well, that doesn't seem really relevant. The way that they told us, like, these introductions are supposed to be relevant to what you're talking about. Sometimes they would say things like, I'm wearing a shirt that has a goddess symbol on it as I am a practicing pagan. So, like, that was a visual to people that I might be a practicing pagan based off the symbol of my shirt, and you wouldn't have gotten that if I didn't say it out loud, if you couldn't see it. So relevant things versus not. And on the first day, I'm hearing these land acknowledgments, and I'm like, it doesn't seem relevant. On the second day, they have one of the facilitators come out and give basically a statement to the entire conference to say, we've been made aware that these land acknowledgments are really not in the right spirit of what we're doing here, and you should consider not doing them. Not saying you don't have to not do them, because they were very open to say you choose your descriptors, but kind of said, hey, there's some information available now. We're hearing from people impacted by this that it's really not a right way to do it. They also told people, same way, you should also, we've heard that it doesn't come across right if you are a white person describing yourself as light-skinned, because light-skinned means something different when you're not white. And so some people would describe themselves as like a light-skinned or a dark-skinned mixed-race person, something that could be relevant to the content experience they're bringing to it. If you're white, say white. Stop saying you're light-skinned if you're white. Say you're white. Also, because some people may be of mixed race, and you can't tell because their physical features look very white and they acknowledge that. Oh my God, people flipped the fuck out. I kid you not, in the chatter, I had no idea Liz brought up the land acknowledgement until afterwards. People were going insane. Well, my congregation's connected to this, and I did this, and I did this. And in my head, I just kept thinking, this is so performative in what you're doing. Because I wanted to ask all of them, I was like, are you Native? Are you part of a tribe? Are you connected to a tribe? Is there a reason for this? And but it did. There was a whole lot of chatter about it the next few days. Some people almost angrily still included it in their opening. Some people I could tell were reading their opening and they didn't change a word no matter what anybody else said, because some people still said they were light-skinned when they were white, and some people still did land acknowledgments. There was one person, though, who I think did an appropriate land acknowledgement after the announcement was made that said, I'm with this church. We have permission of this tribe to say we are on their land and we are connected and we work with them. And I was like, cool, relevant to what you're doing. You're doing work with that church or with that tribe, with your church. They've told you that you can use this land acknowledgement and you therefore are sharing it in the context of this. But it was one of those things that just went through the chatter the next 3 days about it. And I had no idea it was Liz who started it in there. But I love that impact of GA is calling people out appropriately for what they're doing. I do feel like I appreciated the response by UUA of raising it up. I also did appreciate it that they didn't police it in the way, like if somebody did it, they didn't immediately cut them off, because I do think there's a level of personal growth and accountability that happens that they were allowing to happen. So if you were asked by somebody within a community to not use that term and you still decide to use that term, UUA was kind of like, well, then you face the consequences of your actions. People might not like what you have to say. They might still call you out on it. But it was something that we noticed when it came to, I think, the idea of listening to others. There was a platform for that.
So I'll say a couple other things mm-hmm. about that, and that is that both of my grandfathers spent time in boarding schools. And so while the experience for them, as most children who were sent there, was completely traumatic and reduced the Indian population by another 50% simply by the cruelty and or lack of attendance to illnesses and things that many of the children there suffered, a lot of those same children, once they were able to graduate or leave those schools, didn't go back to their tribes, because they went back home and the whole idea of living in a flea-infested tent didn't really appeal to them anymore. And yet, what they didn't understand is by attempting to assimilate and and propelled themselves into the larger society, they were always going to be treated as second-class citizens, which I observed both of my grandfathers going through on a number of occasions. And of course, the whole idea behind much of that was to assimilate the tribe so that the government would no longer have to pay any restitution to them. And let's see, what else did I want to say about that? And to a large extent, it did work. Our Indian population is probably less than 25% of what it was when colonists first arrived here. And oh, and as a result of that, all of the descendants of my grandparents will never be able to be eligible for tribal membership. And sometimes that's a result of government contracts, and sometimes it's a result of the rules of the individual tribe. I know that, like in one case with one of my grandfathers, their tribe was not recognized at the time that he left it. So if he wasn't a member at the time that they were recognized, he would never be able to be one, and neither would his descendants. And for my other grandfather, their rules on a local basis are just that if you marry outside the tribe, we don't know you. So, you know, it's all very complex, and there are very few general blanket statements you can make that apply to all tribes, with the exception of a few things, like every single one of them has had their treaties broken. So, with that,
Have one more thing I was going to say on accountability and community. I did notice a trend across a lot of the parts when I did hear the chatter or when we heard some of the discussion when we think about accountability, acknowledging that it was very difficult for people to step up and speak as a concern against something that was very popular, which the majority of things that came up were very popular across UUs, which makes sense. Climate change is a topic many UUs are passionate about. It was difficult for people to step up. I saw some perception of people, of the difference of them feeling like they had a right to be agreed with, not that they had a right to be heard. And so I tend to see this a lot as I've traveled and worked with and talked with a lot of UUs, is that sometimes we tend to think, well, if I just explain it to you, you're going to agree with me. And I saw that on both sides, where it's like, if I can just get the right words, I'm going to change your mind. I don't think there were a lot of minds changed on any topic while we were there. And so it was difficult for some people who are used to talking through something until we both agree on it to acknowledge that we have 15 minutes of discussion and then the vote's going to open. You don't get to talk this until you feel comfortable with it. You just don't. And not everybody has to listen to how you feel about it. You might not even get to speak to the whole group. Now, you can put your concerns in the chat, but nobody might respond to you, and some people were ignored. And so I think it was very hard for people who are used to feeling like they have a right to take up space within a conversation, or I should say a right to take up as much space as they want to within a congregation, to be limited and to be told, you can express your voice in other ways, but this is the process here. On the plus side of community, what I did see is there are people from big towns, small towns, all over the United States, really different congregations, really different communities. I got to experience some with a lay leadership cohort, and oh my God, are those our people? Everything everybody was saying, I was just like, yes, yes, yes. It was really great to meet other groups that are in similar situations to us, that are like, you know, in the middle of California, and obviously have a very different community that they live in, but are having some of those experiences. So it was kind of cool to have those pockets of community that you could find as you were going through.
You know, and going back to Native Americans for a minute, on the topic of having a right to speak versus a right to being agreed with, if a black person came up to you and said, look, you can't be doing this or that anymore, it's offensive to the black community, very few of us would try to defend ourselves or argue about it. But Native Americans get that all the time, and that's because we're still looking at them like Tonto and the Lone Ranger. The Lone Ranger always has the final say, not Tonto, even about matters that just concern him. And so this ideology about who Native Americans are and the fact that they're childlike and have to be protected, or they're noble savages, or all these other ideas portrayed in Hollywood movies have impacted us psychologically on a very subconscious level, and we tend to act them out in our relationships when we meet one of those people without realizing it. And so I was trying to kind of gently bring that to people's attention, that you don't need to speak for us. We are just fine doing that on our own. And well, this is an example where we're talking about land acknowledgments. We don't all have the same idea for that. And one of the things that I found that was really kind of interesting is that there were even other minorities who were giving me a little heck about land acknowledgments. It's like, I get that you're a minority, but you're not my minority. So, you know, I don't know where you get your expertise from. But even myself as a non-tribal matter, I can only speak about Indians in generalities and from my own experience, as opposed to what goes with a specific tribe, and talk about it in official capacity unless I have their permission to do so.
So I think how we voted is the last part here with it. So a couple of things that we wanted to share from reflections on the actual votes. What I appreciated when we actually voted on the Article 2 revision, one that had more time devoted to the discussion than the others. It's still within the agreed upon procedures. But they started off by putting a couple of questions out before the discussion began. And these are some of the questions that they posed to the whole group. They didn't answer. They just put the questions out there before the discussion began. It said, what is one thing that matters? What is one thing that will happen if this vote does not go the way you want? And if the vote does go the way you want, what will you do to reach out in healing to those who wanted it the other way? They also pointed out to understand, as we had the discussion, and to ask ourselves, is the speaker disagreeing with your perspective or your personhood? Because those are two different things and we tend to confuse them. So if they're disagreeing with your perspective, that's different than if they're disagreeing with your personhood and your right to be that person. Within the debate on Article 2 revisions, some spoke as individuals and some spoke on behalf of their congregations, and they were very clear to say, I'm speaking for my congregation or I'm speaking for myself. What I found interesting is on both sides, the pro and the con, people spoke against creeds. Some were like, the previous Article 2 was a creed and we shouldn't do it. And others were like, this new one is a creed and we shouldn't do it. I was like, cool. Some of the general themes of the cons were very similar to some things we discussed. Keeping the conversation going, we haven't gotten to the best way yet. We need something that more people can support. There needs to be the principles still because they serve as well. What I found interesting, there was a group of people that were very concerned that there was no way to do RE around the new values. And somebody who got on and was like, you can do RE about anything. Like, that's not a concern. Those of us who are RE directors, we got this. We can do this. There were concerns that it changes the way that UUA and congregations interact. The choice of the word serve and how the UUA serves congregations was a big sticking point for some people. Some people actually thought it was too close to the principles and it needed to change more. And some people thought it was way too far and it was too big of a change. So the cons were kind of split in that. Some of the general themes of the pro is that people were eager for where we're going next, that they knew that we would never have a perfect Article 2, but that's the point. It's not perfect. It grows and changes. Some liked that it included calls to action that they thought were stronger than other ones. Some people also just said flat out, don't get stuck on the new words because we should change them again in 15 years. Just keep living the values you feel and it'll all come together. And then knowing that this has to move UUism into the future, that the idea is that revisions to Article 2 move us forward. We know we're not ready to be there yet, but Article 2 sets the next goal point for us to move towards. And so every time we change the words, we're moving where we're going to next, and we have to move that direction, and then we'll know and be able to see the next point to go to. So I found it very interesting, a lot of the things there. I will say Liz shared she voted yes on everything. I did not vote yes on everything. I did take very much to heart what I promised the congregation, and I did vote yes on Article 2. I will note Article 2 passed with about 80% approval. I actually thought it might not pass. I mean, based off of some of the comments and knowing that, I really wasn't sure, and it passed with a higher percentage than I thought. I did vote yes for putting everything on the agenda because I figured it made it that far. I at least thought people should hear it. I voted yes on the business resolution. I voted yes on the action of immediate witness related to climate change. That had the highest percentage out of all of them. It was like a 97 or something. UU's really united on climate change. Less united on our ability to follow rules than we are on climate change, which I think speaks to who we are. I voted yes on the solidarity with Palestinians. I voted no on the action of immediate witness for the responsive resolution to solidarity with Palestinians. That was the resolution that in the solidarity with Palestinians, it's really calling on Israel to end the conflict and to support Palestine. In the response, it was calling specifically on Hamas about the hostage situation. I voted against it for two reasons. I really felt the hostage situation was already addressed within the resolution. The responsive resolution, I felt, was more to just make people kind of step back and say, actually, we kind of support both sides. It was a little bit more of a people pleaser than it was necessarily saying, no, genocide is wrong. So I voted no on that one. I also voted no on the COVID-19 one. I will say I voted no on the COVID-19 one, feeling wholeheartedly that it would pass, and it did pass with a significant amount of support. The reason that I voted no on it is because it called for specific action from UUA that I believe are outside the scopes of action of immediate witness. UUA is not bound to any of those things that are in there the way that they are with the business resolution. So I actually felt like what they put forward, two reasons. One, it called on UUA to do things that I didn't think was appropriate for the congregations to call on UUA in that way to do. There's a way to do that, and this was not that way. And that means that UUA doesn't have to do any of them. So again, it felt very performative versus action-based. And two, I didn't think it rose to the same level of immediate concern that the others did. Not that I feel that COVID is not an ongoing problem, but everything that they had in there I felt was already being addressed in some way. It wasn't necessary for this to address it. Happy to talk more about any of these items. I know Liz is too. We were joking yesterday that we were going to say at the end of this that if any of you had questions about this, well, screw you, we're done. There was a long conference and we're not talking about it anymore. But actually, we would be really happy to talk with any of you guys after this about any of the specific votes, any questions you have, any of that. So we will talk to you about the vote if you want to. Just not right now. We'll do it at the end. All right, Annie, we're going to pop back up to do our offering and meditation. We encourage our members and friends to give of their time, talents, and treasures as they are able. If you're a visitor today, your presence is our gift, and we do not ask you to give unless truly moved to do so. But members and friends, please consider giving to the church the donations link found through the QR code on the back of your bulletin. Each month, our congregation also chooses a local nonprofit to support with their offering, and this month, our nonprofit is Barkers and Whiskers Animal Rescue Group. As part of this, this month too, we also have Kate's Girl Scout troop is making cat beds and catnip things for their Bronze Award project that they're donating to Barkers and Whiskers. So funds that are raised through the congregation will also go to Barkers and Whiskers. If you're not very familiar with them, Annie is. but both of our cats that we got were through Barkers and Whiskers, actually one of them coming directly from Annie's house where he was fostered. So they do a lot of great work for local pets. We also have our food collection, if you have anything to give to that. As a reminder, we collect food to donate towards a local pantry each week. As you are able, please consider bringing in non-perishable items and placing them in our collection bin, and then once a month, we deliver them. Annie's gonna do our meditation. If you want to follow along, the words are printed within your order of service.